From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
Welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. This week, we'll check into the Carmel Celebration of Bands, meet poet Adrian Matika, and learn about Exhibit Columbus. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What Will We Do?
Don't miss a word right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today, the Carmel Celebration of Bands, the Indie Fringe Festival, and Nickel Plate Arts plans its fall season. But first up, Adrian Matika writes vibrant, rhythmic poetry, and in his new book, Map to the Stars, he navigates the tensions among race, geography, and poverty in America during the Reagan era. The Ruth Lilly Professor of Poetry at Indiana University Bloomington stopped by our studios to talk with contributor Mark Allen about growing up in Indianapolis and the subjects that inspire his work.
So before we get into your work specifically, I have a couple of general, slightly weird questions. And one of them is, on your income tax form, do you put poet or professor?
You know, I wish I could put poet, but I don't make enough money to claim income taxes off poetry. So it is. I put professor down there. That's what my primary job is as a professor.
Yeah, I figured as much. But it would be, I just want to meet one person who puts poet down.
I'd love that.
That would be great. So, and my other offbeat question is, how does one know that one is a poet?
See, I'm still trying to figure that out. Maybe that's the other part of the income tax question. It's like, I don't really know if I could. I have books of poems, so I guess in that way it makes me a poet. But I read people I think are poets, you know, like Terrence Hayes and Lucille Clifton and these really incredible writers. And it feels like an experience when I read their work. And that feels to me like what poetry is supposed to be. And I don't feel like that's what happens with my poems.
So. I will beg to differ, but let's go on. Okay, so you've satisfied my strange curiosity. Now, would you read us a poem from your new collection, Map to the Stars? I selected one I really like called Do Work. But if you'd rather read something else, that's fine.
No, that'd be great. Thanks. I'm glad to talk about this, especially since it's set on the east side of Indianapolis. The whole book is, in fact. So this is called Do Work, and it's after a painting of Jean-Michel Basquiat's called Max Roach. Saturday night, the last blue of the week, and the stars were already at work, and electricity was still off even though my mother worked at Fort Benjamin Harrison for the sixth straight day. And inside our currentless absence, my first bit of black happenstance, the namelessness of it all, the crass powerlessness of not having. Our walls didn't even have enough meat to keep out the drumming. We were all cramping and drinking water and WTLC on the portable radio. Every commercial, meaty spaghetti and garlic bread from the Italian spot, chicken and pie from the barstool diner next to the village pantry. And I was a drummer, big-mouthed and without a drumstick, collecting beats like quick breaths and a bellyache from being in charge again.
Is that a happy memory?
WTLC is a happy memory. but thinking about being hungry is complicated, especially because it was just a habit at the time. You know, now it's something that is not part of my life anymore unless I forget to eat lunch.
Right.
So I think part of the thing that this poem, and some of the poems in this book as a whole do, is interrogate an experience of not having from a distance. I couldn't have written them back then. You know, I mean, it's hard to think about writing a poem about being hungry when you're actually hungry.
Yeah. One of the things I really liked about your work is, and still like, I didn't mean to put it in past tense, is that there's an understandable, I think, catchy rhythm to it. When I read it, I see my eye picks up the flow and the beat of the words fairly quickly, and that doesn't always happen for me in contemporary poetry. And it also may be a strange observation because jazz is part of your world and your work. But so I guess what I want to ask you is tell me about how you use rhythm in your writing.
That's great. Well, thank you for saying that, too. I mean, because the sound of things is really important to me. You know, I don't think a poem can be a poem without sounding good. You know, there's a reason people write sonnets. You know, they rhyme, they sound great. Mm-hmm. You know, I think about writing a poem as trying to create music from words. And so I'm constantly thinking about what connections of consonants and vowels we can put together to make things that sound like music. I also always listen to music when I write, almost always jazz, sometimes electronica, hip-hop, you know, rap music without the rap, like just the beats. Yeah. So things that are going to instill a kind of rhythmic intention in the language for me.
You know, it's funny. I had the best 17 straight days of writing that I ever did. I was listening to Sketches of Spain.
Oh,
and I don't
yeah.
– I mean, and I've never been able to recreate it. But the yeah. rhythm that of that music and the sound of that just made it flow for this period that I was out doing a particular project. So
that's wonderful. It's a great amazing. Album, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think before Kind of Blue, that was, you know, Miles Davis' best-selling album yeah. and still is one of his bestsellers because it's an inviting world of music. You listen to it and you can really wrap it around yourself. So I can imagine it would offer up a good atmosphere for writing.
Yeah, it worked. So this book, Map to the Stars, is largely autobiographical.
Yes.
And so tell me how you get from that to Ruth Lilly, professor of poetry at IU.
Well, I went to Indiana as an undergrad, and that's where I found poems. So it's interesting. It's an interesting circle to have come back. But, you know, when I was younger, we didn't have a lot. But my mother married my stepfather, and we ended up in the suburbs. And it was a very, very different experience, you know. And I think that movement was what put in motion the opportunity to think about the world in a less pragmatic way. Because poetry can move things and it can inspire people, but it's also doesn't have the same applications as being an accountant. Mm-hmm. So had it not been for that move out to the suburbs, I don't know that I would have found poetry in the way that I did.
Would you have even found higher ed?
You know, I think I would have because my mother went to college mm-hmm. And she was really adamant that we weren't going to end up, you know, where we were. That was something of her. I mean, she's a highly motivated, really impressive person in that way.
When I met you, you were doing this reading at the Golden Gloves fights at the Tube Factory,
yes.
which was a little strange, poetry and boxing, but... But anyway, so tell me about standing in a ring and reading your poetry.
Oh, it was great. You know, I love the work that they're doing in Big Car and you know, especially in that tube factory space. It's really incredible. Well, you know, my book before Maps of the Stars, The Big Smoke, is all about boxing, and I'm a big boxing fan. So it was a great intersection for me to be there with those wonderful boxers and a crowd who was... Some of them were there for the boxing. There were like five people who were my friends, so they were there for me. And then there was also a group of people there for the art exhibit, too. So it was a big, like a sort of a mashup of different opportunities. I loved it. And so it was really cool to be in there in the ring reading. And also, you know, they were projecting the fight scenes from Jack Johnson behind me, too, as I was reading poems about Jack Johnson. So that was very... that was a really transcendent moment for me.
Yeah. And let's finish up with one of the poems from that book. Would you read The Sporting Life?
Yeah, sure. And so this is in the voice of Jack Johnson, and almost the entire poem is a direct quote. Sporting Life. People are always talking about if and suppose, like those words are worth more than money, more than the creeps a silk stocking makes on a woman's thigh, more than the grumble of a Thomas Flyer engine, so I take the sides of my pleasures. Two small words, if and suppose, and nobody can explain them. We get in this world what we're gonna get. After all, one man could roll out of bed and be killed while another man falls from a scaffold and lives. A man could get a bullet in the brain and keep his life while some other poor sap dies from a shot in the leg. It's all luck and perspective. Pleasure is both to me.
Contributor Mark Allen with poet Adrian Matika. His new book, Map to the Stars, is available from Penguin Press. And later this month, he'll start his sixth year as a professor of poetry at Indiana University Bloomington. And if you're listening to us on Saturday morning, you can meet Matika today at the free Dive Dapper Poetry Carnival from 2 to 8 at Butler University's Ephraimson Center for Creative Writing. Look up Dive Dapper Poetry Carnival on Facebook for the schedule. If you like band music, jazz, swing, classical pop, New Orleans, you name it, you need to be in Carmel on August 18th and 19th for the free Carmel Celebration of Bands. Some are inside, some are outside, and all promise enthusiastic playing. Charlie Conrad and Frank Stevens set aside their spit valves for a few moments to tell me some highlights. Frank, as if it isn't enough to play French horn, you've also gotten suckered into, I mean, you volunteered to chair the Carmel Celebration of Bands. How did that happen?
Well, the first year that we had it, I was on the committee, and then unfortunately the person who was leading the charge there had a family emergency, so it was kind of like next up. So, and then this is year three, and I enjoy doing it. I have a great team. Everybody's got their little specialties, and we meet, talk about what needs to be done, and meet again to make sure it got done.
That sounds like a good And don't worry, I'm not going to give out your email address because some of our listeners are going to go, that's the ideal kind of committee member.
Yes,
people are going to be wanting to recruit you. Charlie, remind me of what the mission of this Celebration of Bands is.
Well, I guess the overall mission is just to show the diversity and strengths of bands of all types and also to present a great show to the people of Carmel.
And you use a variety of venues. Frank was telling me before we turned the microphones on that on Friday night, it's kind of you're going to be waving people in from the street.
Right. We'll be downtown right next to the Monon Trail and Main Street on 2nd Avenue Northwest between Scotty's and Bub's Restaurant. Get in a plug for some of my friends. And we'll have about a block-long space for the audience and the bands.
And then Saturday, you're going to be in a place with great acoustics, the Tarkington Civic Theater.
Right. We'll do the afternoon session in the Tarkington Theater in the Carmel Center for the Performing Arts, and then back downtown to 2nd Avenue Northwest for the evening session on Saturday.
So run us through the bands who are going to appear. Let's just do them in chronological order.
All right. We will open with the Indianapolis New Horizons Band at 5:30 on Friday.
What kind of music?
They're a concert band, and they are largely people who played in high school and then didn't play for many years and picked up their instruments again once they retired or once they got settled in their life. And they do a great job, and John Marshall is their conductor, and we'll be bringing them.
Fun.
Then we go to 6:30, the Jefferson Street Parade Band from Bloomington. And this is a group of about, 8 or 9 guys who really put on a great show.
These guys are wild.
Yeah, they play all sorts of music. They're kind of like a New Orleans street band.
Yeah.
The Indiana Wind Symphony will perform at 7:30, and we will have soloist soprano Jessamine Anderson with us. Then 8:30, the final one of the Friday night, is the Joy Swing Jazz Orchestra. And they're a traditional big band and playing all sorts of jazz, probably from Glenn Miller to modern music.
Fun. And then Saturday, everybody gets to sleep in a little bit and have a cup of joe before we start back in, right?
Right. The Indianapolis Municipal Band leads off at noon. And then followed by the Lake Area Concert Band from Northern Indiana, the Indianapolis Symphonic Band at 2, the Bloomington Community Band at 3, and then finishing off with the Indiana Wind Symphony at 4.
So, Frank, this is casual enough that people could drop in and drop out, right?
That is correct. Friday night, one of the things that we started last year, is we will provide seating, we'll provide chairs. pardon me, what we found was you have a lot of walk-through traffic and just they want to stop and listen. But they're kind of saying, anybody got a chair? They're not carrying a chair walking down Main Street. So we will have chairs available. And, of course, it's free. It's a flow in, flow out, and you just get an opportunity to hear some great bands and enjoy the day with your family.
Dr. Conrad, you don't have a sneaky little other motivation of trying to recruit people to the Indiana Wind Symphony through this, do you?
Well, it's always good. We're more trying to recruit audiences, I would say, than musicians, although we have had a couple of people decide that they were interested in auditioning for the IWS through seeing the Celebration of Bands.
Charlie Conrad and Frank Stevens are two of the driving forces behind the Carmel Celebration of Bands. It starts Friday evening, August 18th, and continues through Saturday, August 19th. You'll hear everything from Mozart to Dixieland. Plan your listening at CarmelCelebrationOfBands.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Coming up, it's nearly time for the Indie Fringe Festival. But first, Jolene Ketzenberger brings us a new journey for food and beverage lovers.
And we are here today talking with Andy Gilman and BJ Davis of B Coffee Roasters in Indianapolis about Gen Con. So thank you guys for coming in. I know it's starting to get crazy for you.
Really? Really? Yeah, yes. It started getting crazy last week, and then we got hit with another convention that we didn't expect.
So tell me why Gen Con is so crazy for you. I mean, you're kind of at ground zero of Gen Con. You're right there by the convention center, but I'm sure it's more than that.
Well, yeah, and we are literally across the street from the main door of the convention center. But Gen Con as a convention hits the city in a way no other convention does.
How so?
Well, because they do dearly love this convention, and they love the city.
And they seem to love you guys.
Yes. Yes. We do have quite a following and a fandom.
Well, it is amazing, and that's why I wanted to talk about it. How did this happen? How did you become like the Gen Con coffee shop?
Well, I think there are a couple things. One is we actually are nerdy people.
I'm into Star Trek, Star Wars, that kind of thing. Andy grew up playing D&D and a lot of games. And his brother goes to Gen Con. We have employees who, when we first opened downtown and we hired our employees, it was like, oh, yeah, we got to be ready for Gen Con.
So for people who might not know exactly where you guys are, tell me exactly where you are in relation to the convention center.
We are in the Pan Am Plaza office building on the first floor next to the parking garage doors, facing Capitol Avenue. If you were looking for the cross street, it would be Georgia and Capitol.
And that's where the main entrance, the big glass box that's the main entrance to the convention center, is right across from our front door.
Right.
So you literally are right in the middle of everything.
We are Gen Con Central.
Ground zero.
Ground zero, absolutely.
Oh, you know, the other thing we do, talk about that, is we do Java the Hut.
Java the Hut is our little outdoor iced coffee stand. And we also have canned and bottled water and canned drinks out there. We may be adding maybe a keg of house-made soda to Java that might look like, or it may be inside, that might look like Romulan ale.
We do special drinks for Gen Con. We have we are doing a house-made soda called Romulan Ale.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be bright blue. We're doing a special drink called the Sith, which is a Campana, which is whipped cream over, espresso over whipped cream, but we're doing a house-made coconut whipped cream.
So it's vegan.
It's vegan.
Oh, nice.
And there's a sprinkle of black and red Hawaiian salt on top, which makes it the Sith, because a little dribble of agave.
So you guys you guys have fun with this.
We do.
Right? We have a lot of fun.
It's so busy.
We have a surprise that's coming to Java the Hut this year, and we won't divulge that.
No.
Well, okay. We'll have to wait.
A surprise employee.
Yes, a new employee.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much. This is great. Looking forward to Gen Con.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indie Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. Well, Welcome back to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and coming up, making art with your date is certain to give you a new perspective on that certain someone. But right now, Greenwood native J.J. Marie Gafrida makes her Indie Fringe Festival debut this year with a new play based on a book that she wrote about helping corporate America understand the need for equality and tolerance in the workplace. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer is here to tell us why such a topic that doesn't sound very fringy really is.
It is indeed, and Gafrida actually consults with businesses and executives both here and in Canada to help them bring more diversity into their workplaces. Now, she told me that when she transgendered, she took a lot of notes about how her change actually affected other people, which is pretty interesting. So she put all that information together, and it became a book. It's called Left-Hander in London, a field guide to transgenders, lesbians, gays, and bisexuals in the family, on the job, and in the pew.
But I wanted to write a book to help people process, what do I do, you know, in my case, being transgender, but just in general with things that are different, and how do you have a relationship with people? So that's why I wrote the book. And
was that easy to translate into a play then?
It was easy because I had a lot of pent-up sarcasm and smart-aleck answers that it really helped me cope with when it didn't go well or when it did. And so I thought, gosh, it would be more fun to get on stage. So I wrote a few songs and I told a few stories, and it's been fun to put that together and get out there. And know when I'm practicing the piano, it's because I'm going to be in front of a whole theater full of people, so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and this year you're in one of the new theaters, too. It's the Firefighters Union Hall Theater, which is one of the newer buildings down there on Mass Ave, so that's kind
of
nice as
well. I'm looking forward to it, and they have beer in my building.
That's right. The beer tent is now actually indoors this year at the Fringe Festival, and that's always a great hangout kind of place. But the Fringe Festival is also a great place to get a serious messages out in more comedic, easygoing ways. And I know that's very important to you.
Yep. Back in when I first got into management many years ago, I trained the first black female supervisor. And she had a real bad time, not with the company. The company promoted her on her merits, but she had trouble with people that weren't used to having women supervisors. They weren't used to having black supervisors. It was a big culture change for them. With being transgender, have a little sense of humor and getting out there in front of people and telling stories and having fun, it helps to break down some of those barriers. And a lot of times people have preconceived notions that they don't even know where they came from. And I've had people say, look, I really like you and I thought you were very funny. I have a lot of problem with transgender people, but you're great. And I'm like, well, I am a transgender people, and like, what did everybody else do? Plus, I didn't do anything. I told a couple jokes and sang a song. And so it's important, I think, to humanize it a little bit and also get everybody on the same side. If they sing a couple of the songs or they just rock a little bit, then we're in good shape.
And since this is your first Fringe Festival, do you hope to take this play to other Fringe Festivals or just to other venues?
My plan is to be discovered during the festival, preferably by a premium TV like HBO, Showtime, something like that. They'll put me in a stadium, $100 a ticket, $65,000. One show, they'll film it, they'll put it on TV all the time, then the career is done. That's my plan.
As you can see, Ms. Gafrida has a very sarcastic sense of humor, but seriously, she does want to take her show on the road, but mainly to companies to help them teach diversity with a sense of humor. So the Indie Fringe Festival runs August 17th through the 27th, and you can find show times and buy your tickets for all performances online at indiefringe.org.
Well, you know what? I can't believe it's Indie Fringe season. We'll be talking about the Penrod Arts Fair soon. It means the summer is winding down. But don't worry, we have lots of events to fill your late summer days on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
So an evening of music, iconic Western images, and Native American pottery is in store on August 27th. The Idlejord Museum is hosting a world premiere. It's of an opera called Songs of Clay and Stone. And this is kind of an unusual project for them. They don't normally get involved in music, but that's all coming up on August 27th. And you can find out lots more about the sculptures and the music at their website at idlejord.org.
We mentioned the Indie Fringe starts August 17th, runs through the 27th, but on Wednesday, August the 16th at 6 p.m. at the Athenaeum, they're having their annual sneak peek event where they have numerous performers get up on stage and give you about 3 minutes of their act. So it's a great opportunity to come and see a lot of these performers. You can take notes, then that way when you arrange your theater time for the festival, because it's hard to see all of the shows. You can if you're very very good about it, but this is a great way to come and see which shows you really want to make sure you see during the Indie Fringe Festival. That's Wednesday, August 16th at the Athenaeum in downtown Indianapolis at 6 p.m.
There's something kind of magical about sitting out at Symphony on the Prairie and hearing cover bands and tribute bands play the music that you've been hearing on the classic oldies stations for a long time, or the pop and rock stations. Well, if anything I just said perked your interest, you should pay attention. Symphony on the Prairie, still to come yet this season, music of the Beatles, the Fleetwood Mac Experience, Who's Bad, the music of Michael Jackson, Purple Vein, the Essential Prince tribute band, and also the music of Led Zeppelin. So you can cover, gosh, what did that cover? About 40 years of pop and rock music there. You can find out lots more at IndianapolisSymphony.org.
Gen Con is back. It's the 50th year. They're celebrating the best 4 days in gaming, and they mean gaming of all sorts, from manufactured games to sports games to online games to you name it. They've got it. 140,000 different people will be there with their products. It's a fun time in downtown Indianapolis just to come and sit and watch, because everybody likes to dress up like their favorite fantasy and sci-fi game people that they follow. And they're once again having their outdoor experience on Georgia Street the entire time, August 16th through the 18th, from like 9 to 8 p.m. There'll be a lot of fun things going on that are free out there on Georgia Street, in addition to all the Gen Con fun that's going on at the convention center.
Don't forget the Bloomington Boogie Woogie Piano Festival is going on this very weekend. You can find out more at bloomingtonboogies.com, bloomingtonboogies.com. I dare you not to tap your toes.
And along with Gen Con, the Middle Space Gallery at Cat Head Press, they are having a special exhibit that opens on Thursday, August the 17th, from 5 to 8 p.m. They're pairing up with Amoca, the Museum of Contemporary Art, along with Together Studios, and they are having a exhibit that is just donated, is all about the gaming culture. It's called Level Up, and it's art that's been inspired by gaming. And it will be a fun place to go, whether you're a gamer or not. And then the exhibit is up through the entire month of August.
Connor Prairie this weekend is doing a reenactment of a funeral. Prairie Town's beloved Lydia Hawkins has died, leaving behind her husband and several children. And you can pay your respects throughout the morning at the Curtis home and then join the procession to the cemetery, followed by a service with Brother Brownfield. And afterwards, you can sample funeral biscuits and lemonade and visit with the citizens of Prairie Town as they share the remembrances of Lydia. Great outing to have and conversation to have with maybe your kids who are middle school or maybe a little bit older. That's all going on at Connor Prairie this very weekend.
And if you need more things to do, then we are going to send you to the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. You'll find it online at indiearts.org/guide. And then we will be back again next week with even more activities on that calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble.
If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Don't go anywhere. Road trips to the Nickel Plate Arts District and Columbus, Indiana are just ahead. Nickel Plate Arts has nothing to do with plates or metal foundries and everything to do with the celebration of a band of six communities with diverse arts offerings to the north of Indianapolis. Nickel Plate Arts Director Ailey McGill came south to give us a sneak peek of highlights of the organization's fall programming.
Nickel Plate Arts was a project of Hamilton County Tourism. They founded us to try to lend some support to the existing arts groups that were in the six towns from Fisher to Tipton all the way up the Nickel Plate Railroad. There were lots of existing arts groups there, but they were virtually all volunteer run. And so they were doing wonderful things. But when you have to rely on volunteers, sometimes it's really hard to move forward or to grow or to make big change. So Hamilton County Tourism hoped that if we had some, you know, paid administrative staff in place who could always be relied on, that would really support those arts efforts that are going on. And in the 5 years we've been in existence, we've really seen some progress in those areas. We've helped Noblesville get its cultural arts district designation status. We've helped get some new exhibition spaces and some public art put in Fishers. And we've even started operating a really amazing shared artist workspace up in Atlanta, Indiana, teeny tiny Atlanta. So there's some really exciting things that have come as a result of Hamilton County Tourism's vision for us.
And it's a great opportunity to be an umbrella kind of service bureau and to lure people from each of those six towns to the other six towns, but also, honestly, from Indianapolis to
absolutely
come
north. Yeah. Right. Yes.
And one of your signature events actually is coming up, and for people who haven't experienced it tonight, I want you to tell us about date night. I love date night.
Yes. So a few years ago, we had the idea to ask local artists to run art stations for couples. So what's an activity that you could come up with that anybody can be successful at, no matter what their skill level is, and that more importantly would allow couples to just have fun and learn about each other in a new way? So we started doing a date night for February, and it became so popular that we've spread it out throughout the year. So our date night in August will have four stations on our campus, and each of them will kind of focus on a different type of art. There's some theater, there's some literature, there's some, and I think two different visual art stations. And then we're also pairing with businesses around town, so it's almost like an arts crawl. Caravan Classes and Kaleidoscope Crossing and Kiln Creations, some other places around Noblesville, will also have stations. So you could walk to one of them, and then, of course, you can have dinner downtown. So it should be lots and lots of fun. We have a theater group in Noblesville that's going to lead some really, truly wonderful activities to create a Shakespearean sonnet and then perform it with your partner. Yeah. And a really beautiful ebru marbling project where you'll be able to marble a piece of art that includes your partner's silhouette in it.
Wow.
So, yeah. So you'll be able to walk away with fabulous art, and we're helping to build those connections with those local artists. They're getting in front of the public, and you get to get a sense of just how wonderful and fun and quirky and just great they are for our community.
Yeah. And you mentioned actually a moment ago your fifth anniversary. You're having an anniversary party. Good for you.
Yes. Yes. September is a month where that is full of wonderful arts opportunities, but it does happen to be the month, the anniversary of the opening of our campus. So 5 years in, we are going to celebrate that with a wonderful dinner. We'll have some presentations as well. And all of the artists who have been showcase artists with us this year will be set up on our campus, so you'll get to talk to them and see their artwork. And then we'll also be celebrating the Nickel Plate Arts Awards. Each year, we want to recognize leaders, both artist leaders and patron leaders, those folks who are really working in our community to support the arts as a whole. So we give away four awards, an Artist of the Year, an Emerging Artist of the Year that really focuses on somebody who is recently a student or who has just entered the artist realm, and then an Emerging Patron of the Year who similarly is just now kind of starting to make headway in either supporting artists or working on community development through the arts, and then an Arts Patron of the Year who's usually more established, and it can be an organization or an individual.
And we, in the short time we have, we cannot possibly do justice to all your programming, but I want to touch on one more thing in this conversation, which is Comic Book in a Day. Yeah. Tell us about Comic Book in a Day.
So much like a parent, I can't ever tell you that there's a program that's my favorite, but Comic Book in a Day might be my favorite. It is a celebration of graphic novels and sequential art that where we challenge artists in 12 hours to make a comic book from scratch on our campus. So for the past several years, we've had between 15 and 20 artists of all different skill levels. We've had middle school students, we've had professionals, we've had people who've never drawn a comic book before, who all come together, and the challenge is for each one of them to make six pages of a story that all goes together on a subject and with characters that they've never worked with before. No working ahead of time. That's the rule. And it is so much fun for those artists. And then any guests who want to drop by, not only can they meet those artists and see the work in progress, but we also have fun comic book related activities throughout the day, including Superhero University, which is a chance for aspiring young superheroes to be put through their superhero paces and flex their super muscles a little bit, both through art and just really fun activities. It's like an hour long romp for kids who hopefully show up in costume and then just learn great things about themselves and their friends.
Nickel Plate Arts Director Ailey McGill. To sign up for the anniversary party, date night, Monday night drawing, comic book in a day, activities, or any of their other classes and events, check them out at nickelplatearts.org. About an hour's drive south of Indianapolis, Columbus is a city with a global reputation for its modernist architecture, art, and landscapes. With a population of only about 45,000 people, it boasts more than 80 buildings, landscapes, and pieces of public art by internationally noted architects and artists. The city's legacy is about to be shown off in a major way through Exhibit Columbus, opening on August 26th. Exhibit Columbus director Richard McCoy and IU School of Art and Design professor Kelly Wilson came in to talk about why people from around the world make pilgrimages to Columbus.
Before Exhibit Columbus, why Columbus? Why is Columbus remarkable? I'm putting you both on the spot.
Great. Well, Columbus is remarkable because it's sort of the singular city in the state of Indiana and really the region of the heartland of America that proves that design matters and that architecture, art, and design are at their highest and best when they're applied to community challenges. And so in Columbus, Indiana, you have a city that's invested in these ideas for 75 years, and today you have a city that has the highest per capita income in the state, among the lowest unemployment, is consistently ranked as a great place to live. And I believe that this is based on the sort of forefathers' belief in investing in the value of good design. And so it's not just about buildings looking fantastic, but it's about buildings and sites and spaces working really well for the community.
So speaking from an architect's point of view, Richard set that up beautifully. Collection of buildings that were the consequence of a private-public partnerships, which is unique to Columbus, which they like to refer to as the Columbus way, how they do their business, that the buildings that were a consequence of this began with a unique individual named Eliel Saarinen, who gave us the first modern church in the United States, designed in 1938 with First Christian. Now, this shepherded in a group of people that surrounded Eliel Saarinen, which included his son and a notable Chicago architect, Harry Weiss, who produced 18 of his early works were done in Columbus. These, Ray and Charles Ims,
did a lot of work in Columbus as well. And the people that were contacted to be part of the architectural program and other architects chosen independent of the Cummins architectural program were part of a modern movement in design that was unique to the Midwest and unique to modernism. It was not the story of the East Coast. And this is why when we walk downtown through Columbus and we come across one of these modern innovative buildings, they tend to make their neighbors, their traditional neighbors, feel better. This is not typical of most modernism.
And the banner of uniqueness continues to fly and is flying over Exhibit Columbus because that was your goal, right?
Well, thanks, Sharon. Yeah, that's the aim, is that this project is designed with a number of things in the community to kind of reach back to that international legacy of design and catalyze new reactions and to get people interested in reinvesting in the value of good design, and also proving that Indiana being a maker state and this being a maker region, that there are people that are innovating in fabrication and making, and that Columbus can become a place that is a kind of table for universities to come and talk about the future of design education. And so this unique legacy coupled with a search for innovation in design, fabrication, and education is all of what it's about. But it's also really about having a great time in Columbus and celebrating a really fun community.
It should be remembered that the uniqueness of the architecture there and its architects were due to the selection of people that weren't famous. They were young. In fact, the famous architects of the time period during the 50s and 60s wouldn't be bothered by the size of the contracts. They were too small. The interstate system had not been invented yet. This was Eisenhower who produced this post-war, and Columbus was hard to get to. So it was people they felt that should be in their 20s and 30s who might be great architects in another 25 to 30 years. Who might they be? We took a similar approach with Exhibit Columbus in trying to identify those people we think would have a great chance at being remarkably well-known in another 15 or 20 years.
Lightning's going to strike again.
We hope.
And I feel as though coming to the preview might be the best place to start, might be a good orientation.
I think so. So, you know, right now we're starting to build a lot of really amazing installations that are going to be like things that haven't been seen before. So there's going to be innovation on view in Columbus. It's building right now, and it's going to culminate really the August 24th, 25th, and 26th. The 25th is our preview party. This is going to be a fundraising event and a chance for folks to come down to Columbus and get to meet some of the folks that are involved in it, celebrate with us, and then get ready for maybe the biggest celebration that's happened in Columbus in a long time on that Saturday, August 26th. Free and open to the public. We're going to open these Miller Prize installations. You're going to get to see them, see the folks that help build them, and have a great time along 5th and Washington.
And these are projects, and the Miller Prize projects are projects that the public not only look at, they can interact with. These are spaces they can enter, walk upon, walk through. These are really interesting pavilions that will engage us because of the way they're built and sort of the way they stimulate an activity between their host sites.
What do you want people to feel or go away with?
Oh, just amazement to realize that that new things were possible, that this city, which stood for innovation, and I have a great quote, Richard. We are in respectful competition with our ancestors. It's a great line.
Yeah.
And it's one where we say that we're not going to rest upon laurels. We use the past as a springboard for inventing our future selves. And what a wonderful idea. These projects will do that. And people should be, they'll be jaw-dropped. One of the projects, this is a bit of a plug for what we do at the Center for IU, is that one of the world's largest 3D printed sculptures will be on display.
It's going to be great. And, you know, I think that, you know, Kelly's got it just right. It's going to be a chance to see innovation. And I think more importantly, I think what I hope people come away with is, particularly as Midwesterners and folks that are small towns or from small towns, or even in Indianapolis, that taking risks is important, and challenging the past and trying to do what you can in the future, as Kelly has said, is what a big part of Columbus's legacy is based on, is being a risk taker and challenging your time. And that's what I hope people see, is an inspiration to see things and to think about how they can make their community better.
We certainly see a lot of discourse surrounding these installations and their projects. And Richard and others on the team have worked very hard to set up programs and for discussion, conversation, to engage these projects on a number of different levels throughout the showing period of the 3 months.
Exhibit Columbus Director Richard McCoy and IU School of Art and Design Professor Kelly Wilson. Exhibit Columbus begins with a preview party on August 25th, and the exhibit runs through November 26th. At the heart of the exhibit are 18 outdoor site-responsive installations. Get all the details to plan your visit at exhibitcolumbus.org. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto, and I want to share an excerpt of an interview I recently recorded with Reverend James Davis of the Indianapolis vocal group The Vanguards. In 1970, The Vanguards scored a national top 40 R&B hit with their ballad, It's Too Late for Love. It's too late, too late for love. Reverend James Davis was the lead vocalist and founder of The Vanguards, and he joins us now to share his thoughts on five classic tunes from The Vanguards. We talked about Somebody Please. How do you feel about when you hear that song today?
Well, it brings back memories. I don't talk about that one much.
Okay. That was about somebody in particular, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it was. You know how young puppy love is in high school. It was about a heartbreak. Somebody please. So that's the most out. So.
That's why there's so much feeling in it, because it was something you were actually experiencing when you created it.
I did.
One of my favorite up-tempo Vanguards records, which was the B-side, I think, to It's Too Late for Love, is The Thought of Losing Your Love, which is a real up-tempo number. What do you remember about that one?
It was, if you notice, the most of those songs were heartbreak-type blues.
Yeah.
Rhythm and blues, and it was because that was the mood of people my age at the time. We weren't having much success at romance. So every one of those songs were heartbreaking.
Sure.
And that's the best I can really say is the mood of us at that time I was able to tap into.
And that became the trademark sound. When you think of The Vanguards, you think of those ballads of lost love, right?
Right, yeah. Lost love, heartbreak. It should have worked, but it didn't.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> I believe it's your love that tried to steal, baby. Oh, something about the things you do explains the changes that I go through. You know the thought of a And Gotta Have Love is a great song, which is about peace and unity and love. And yeah. What do you remember about that
now,
one?
Now, that band was our other one. Now, we had a band that we worked with from California.
Okay.
That band was from California, from L.A. And we did some recording with them. And that was one of the songs that band wrote.
In one of my favorite Vanguard's records, and this is a deep one that has deep lyrics, Man Without Knowledge.
Oh, now that was we call him Moose, Charles Amos. He and I was part of my writing team. We had a little writing team, and Charles Amos wrote that one, The Man Without Knowledge.
Another song that's maybe the most ambitious production with the Vanguards is Girl Go Away.
Again, that was Charles Amos.
And that record, Girl Go Away, has strings in it. It's got a huge production. Yeah. What do you remember about that one?
Well, Herb brought in violins, and it seems to me we recorded at a studio down in Bloomington, Indiana. And it seems to me he brought in these violin players from Indiana University. And I saw these guys come in there with their little violins and their little black suits, and they take one look at your chart and write a score for the violin parts right now and play it right quick and done, gone, see you later. they know music that well.
Thank you, Reverend James Davis, and stay tuned for my full interview with Reverend Davis on an upcoming edition of Cultural Manifesto.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 8 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today's contributors included Mark Allen and Jill Dittmeyer. Hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or join us Thursday nights at 8. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Next week, How to Live Beyond 90 Without Falling Down. Really, it's a new memoir by Georgia Buchanan. John and Sarah Licklider play with science kits at the Indiana State Museum, and Larissa Howard shows art at the Tube Factory. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.